Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Friday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Friday. Hope you are set for an epic weekend that concludes with a Packers victory over the Seattle Seahawks. Really looking forward to this one. And speaking of things that I'm looking forward to, this conversation coming up with Mike Wall. Really think you're going to enjoy it. Great conversation today. We talk Packers, Seahawks, things that are going well, things that aren't going well, Tucker Kraft's breakout. We go into a little bit of everything. I learned something new every single time I talk to Mike. So really think you're going to enjoy today's show. Stick around for that. Before we get there, shout out to Jeffrey N. Custer for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Jeffrey, appreciate that a ton. If you haven't checked out memberships yet, make sure to do so. Also like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews, but mostly thank you for being here. And if you're new to the Pack-A-Day Podcast, welcome. Hope you enjoy the show. Make sure to, again, check it out and make it part of your daily Packers podcast routine. All right, let's get into that injury report sponsored by Habish Habish Rotier. Did not participate for the Seattle Seahawks from an injury standpoint. Trey Brown, their corner. Jonathan Hankins, their defensive tackle, which was rest related. Abraham Lucas, their offensive tackle, which was also knee and rest related. Jarek Reed, their safety. Brady Russell, their tight end. And Kenneth Walker, the running back. Limited was Ernest Jones, the linebacker, which was an upgrade. He was out on Wednesday. He was limited on Thursday. DK Metcalf was downgraded to limited on Thursday. And then Leonard Williams was upgraded. He was mostly due to rest on Wednesday, but he was upgraded to a limited participant on Thursday. Full participants for the Seahawks included Artie Burns, Michael Dickinson, their punter, which was an upgrade. Stone Forsythe, Tyler Lockett, Boye Mafe, Uchenna Nwosu, Jerron Reed, former Packer, Lakin Tomlinson, and Kayvon Wallace. So there is your Seahawks injury report. Let's get to the Packers side of things. Did not participate was Javon Bullard. He was the only player that was not practicing in some capacity for Green Bay. Limited was Corey Ballantyne, Kenny Clark, but that was rest related. Edgerrin Cooper, Elton Jenkins, which was also rest related. Isaiah McDuffie, Luke Musgrave, and Rashid Walker, who went from a full participant to a limited participant. Full participants were Jaire Alexander, Romeo Doubs, Travis Glover, who was upgraded to a full participant. Remember, he had the illness on Wednesday. Josh Myers, LVN, and Evan Williams, who was also upgraded from limited to a full participant. Now, Romeo Doubs and Evan Williams both were still in concussion protocol, so neither of them have cleared yet as of Thursday. Hopefully they clear on Friday. Matt LaFleur did say that Romeo Doubs was trending in a good direction on Wednesday when he was asked about it. Hopefully that remains the case. But as of right now, as of recording this, Evan Williams and Romeo Doubs have still yet to clear concussion protocol, which will be obviously a prerequisite to them playing on Sunday. So key ones to keep an eye on there. Again, Evan Williams and Romeo Doubs from a concussion protocol standpoint. Hopefully no setbacks for anyone. And then Javon Bullard, Edgerrin Cooper, and then to an extent, maybe Luke Musgrave. I doubt he's going to be somebody that gets activated this quickly, but you never quite know. All ones to kind of keep an eye on through the remainder of this week. And as we get into inactives an hour and a half before kickoff on Sunday. That's all I got for news for you today. No other news, no other updates. So let's get to our conversation with Mike Wall. All right, we are back and being joined by the one and only Mike Wall. You can find him on social media at MikeWall68. Mike, it has been a hot second since we've had the opportunity to chat. We've had a lot of these Thursday games. It's been holiday season. I know you've been busy. I've been busy, but it is great to be back catching up with you. First of all, how the heck have you been, my friend?
Andy, been great. Always always good to talk. Thanks for having me on. And it has been a minute. And it's this NFL season has flown by for me. And it's absolutely bonkers. I think there's like 3 or 4 games left for the playoffs. I'm just going like, yep. What happened? You know, these teams are positioning themselves and this, that, and the other. I go, oh my God, it's halfway through December already. It's crazy.
Four weeks left in the regular season. Like you said, we're recording this on December 12th. Time is absolutely flying. We're already starting to see players declare for the draft and like Senior Bowl invites. And it's just like, oh my God, I'm not even remotely ready for any of that yet, but it's going to be a fun final 4 weeks. Green Bay's got 4 interesting games on their schedule. We'll obviously talk about Packers Seahawks in just a moment, 2 teams that, you know, very, very well. Before we get there, and before we even get to Packers Lions, the Packers really since the bye week, just kind of want to do a quick catch up since again, it's been a minute since we've had the opportunity to talk. beat the Bears on a last second field goal. And then they beat the 49ers, beat the Dolphins at home and fairly convincing wins in both of those games. Have mm-hmm. the setback against Detroit, 3-point loss, back and forth, really good struggle, really good battle. Just your thoughts on the last month for the Packers coming off the bye week.
The Packers beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and they lost it to the team they're supposed to lose to. And I know that sounds like very simplistic, but that's where they're at. Like that's how they play football that way. They play really good football against teams that deserve to get their heads beat in. They can beat their heads in. Like they're good at that. I think I really like the way that. I've loved the way that Jeff Hafley's defense has evolved over the course of the year, and guys have developed. It's so funny. Like, there's so much talk about right now about, you know, how the linebackers are liabilities in pass coverage, and it's like, yeah, but really, is that really what we're going with? Or you know, we really don't have a single pass rusher on the team. Yet they find ways to get home through the scheme of the defense and effort and all of these and the secondary playing well. You know, these guys are doing a hell of a job. They did a magnificent job versus Miami. And then we go to this last game and it's like, Andy, if we were drafting the Detroit Lions offense versus the Green Bay Packers offense, and I love the Green Bay Packers offense, but except for left guard, I would probably draft every single player on Detroit. That starts, and you can make the argument about Josh Jacobs and, you know, either Montgomery or Jahmyr Gibbs, but it's pretty darn close. And everybody else, I'm going, Jared Goff's in the MVP race. You know, Laporta and Tucker Kraft. Okay, fair. I mean, you just got a lot of really good players on both sides, but they've got a great offensive line. System wise, they do things really well, and so you're going to struggle against that team. Yeah. You know, defensively, and we talked about it at every show I've been on. If the Packers don't score high 20s. You know, low 30s, they're going to lose. And it just turns out that they played three quarters, scored 31 points, and it still wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it was a heavyweight fight. I really, really enjoyed that game. It sucks when your team doesn't come out on top because it's a little bit tougher to enjoy it. But I love, especially that second half, back and forth. Green Bay gets a big fourth down stop. They get the Keyshawn Nixon interception. They take the lead. Detroit takes the lead. They take the lead. Detroit takes it back. Green Bay ties it. It's just a really, really fun back and forth game. I'm with you. I it's so funny. I was smiling when you said your initial comments about they've beat who they're supposed to. They've lost who they're supposed to. Like, this has been the most chalk team in the NFL this year, the Green Bay Packers. The literally have four games that they've played with teams that have better records than them. They've lost all four of them. They've had nine games that they've played with teams that have now worse records than them. They've won all nine of them. Hopefully that means good news for the Seahawks this week, the Bears, the Saints, and I guess it's bad news for the Vikings coming up, but this is literally who they've been. And I think when you look at all the, whether it's the power rankings or where Vegas has them in the Super Bowl odds, it's like, they're like the sixth, seventh, eighth team, you know, best team in the NFL. It's exactly where they are. And I think that's why this following stretch of four games is to me so intriguing. And I love the matchups that they have because I think there's going to be teams in this stretch that are going to challenge some of the things that Green Bay maybe hasn't done as well as they need to, especially Minnesota and Minnesota. I think they have a gap to close between themselves and Detroit, maybe themselves and Philly, themselves and Minnesota over the course of these next 4 weeks and hopefully make it super interesting come playoff time. Because I think they can beat anyone, but can they go on the road for three games and win three consecutive games to get to a Super Bowl? That to me is the much bigger question.
Yeah. And that's the hard part. The good news, I suppose, is regardless of, I mean, the Packers are going to be in the playoffs. They're probably going to win three out of those four at least. Right.
Yep.
And when you look at if the NFC North has three people in, they have three contestants, then you know that two of those games are toss-ups. I mean, you can kind of, it's not that you throw the record out completely, but you're in the playoffs. Now, home field advantage is going to matter a little bit, especially in Detroit, because I think that place will be crazy. Minnesota will be crazy too, quite frankly.
Yep.
But, you know, you throw the record out a little bit because of the familiarity with the coaching staff, the familiarity with the players, and those games are always very competitive. Even if you want to say one team's better on paper than the other, yeah, we saw it in Dallas last year. Like, I mean, a lot of people maybe had the Packers winning, but not like that.
Right.
You know, and so you can have those kind of games, and certainly because of the arm talent of Jordan Love, the talent in the wide receiver room, the emergence of Tucker Kraft, obviously the way that Josh Jacobs has really, you know, his yards after contact here in this 2024 season, you can point to all of that and go, oh, well, they can score with anyone. There's no reason that they should live. All that, you know, the defense might only have to get one or two stops. So, you know, that part of it, I think, is really interesting. But there are parts of both sides of the football that you want to feel good about going into the playoffs. And to your point, I think, like, you know, Seattle, even this week, they're going to get tested with some of that right now.
And I'm happy they are, like, because that's kind of what the last final four games are for, is because, like you said, they're 98% chance to make the playoffs. Like, they're going to get in. It's going to be a wild card spot. They're going to have to go on the road. So you have a little bit of ability to kind of use this last month as, like, hopefully a launching point and trying to correct some of these issues that have been on the, you know, just on tape for Green Bay. As you go back and look at this Packers-Lions game, do you feel more optimistic about the Packers coming off of this one? They went toe-to-toe with Detroit in their building, showed that they could compete. Are you less optimistic because now they're, again, 0-4 in games against the tougher opponents that they've had at their schedule? Or it basically the same team that you kind of thought going in is what you felt coming out?
That same team for me as when, you know, before the game. I do I have to say, if you were going to pick one of those two, I do think it's relevant that they're 0-4 against good teams. I do think that does say a lot. It does speak volumes. And again, I don't think that, while I could say that Detroit is probably the class of the NFC right now, I can't sit here and say they're just this standard deviation better than anybody else. I just think they have some components. They have one of the better offensive lines. They have an incredible play caller. They have a quarterback who knows exactly who he is. Like, they've got these things about them. The one thing that really, if anything bothers the Green Bay Packers as a locker room or coaching staff coming out of that game, it should be that Za'Darius Smith ran over three of your offensive linemen in the first three plays of the game, and the Detroit Lions defense was way more intense than the Green Bay Packers offense. And if we're just going to make that as a broader statement, the reason that the Detroit Lions are so good is because that their intensity never, like, their execution might waver from series to series, from game to game, their intensity doesn't ever waver. They're the same guys every single time. And most teams, including the Green Bay Packers, their intensity wavers. Their intensity wavered in the first quarter, and that's why they lost the football game. You can point to a bunch of other stuff, but, you know, they play the first quarter, they win the game walking away. Their intensity still wavers as a team, and because of that, there's always going to be question marks. You don't have question marks about the intensity level of the Detroit Lions. Like, when Dan Campbell gets off the mic, you know, pre-game to whatever the sideline reporter is, you're like, oh yeah, they're locked in. We're ready to go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even last year with the playoff game on the line, they said, oh, we're coming in. We only have one thing we care about, is beating the Green Bay Packers, make sure they go to the playoffs. It's like, oh, you know, like, that's how they think about everything. And that's very, as a player, like, that's very dangerous. And you have to be able to rise to that level if you want to compete and expect to win 9 out of 10 games you go against those guys.
So much I want to get into there. Let's start with the intensity. Did you first? Is there a reason that you can like a tangible reason that you can like feel or understand why Green Bay is not hitting that quite yet? And I mean, maybe more importantly, like, it felt to me like Green Bay was tight going into the first quarter of this game, or not confident, or it just felt like there was something a little bit off where they did not match Detroit's intensity in that first quarter. And to your point, it really did feel like that was the major difference in the game. When you go punt, turnover to start the game for the offense, and the defense immediately allows the Detroit Lions to go down the field and score a touchdown right away, it just didn't feel like they were themselves to open that game. And I could understand if that's been like a house of horrors for there or something. But like, they literally went into Detroit last Thanksgiving and won that game and played one of their best games of football. Just felt so weird that they did come out a little bit more not themselves in that first quarter of that game.
There's teams that are just built tougher than other teams. And I don't even want to say, it's like, I'm not going to start here. I could sit here and start picking apart the coaching staff or the locker rooms. Like, there's really no point.
Yeah.
There's some teams that are just built tougher than other teams. And Detroit's one of those teams just built tougher than other teams. Like, they might not be as talented in some areas. I would venture to say that the Seattle Seahawks defense, I like better man to man than I like the Detroit Lions defense, but they're just built tough. And the way that they operate, the way that their head coach, their entire coaching staff talks, the transparency they communicate with the players with, the expectations they have as former players, and all that they bring to the table, like, that matters. The people that they bring there specifically because of their competitive level, the way they talk about things, like, all of that matters. And that's been built in certain places. Like, we used to play the Jets and the Titans. This is a true story, 100% true story. There's an old guy named, his name was Jim Washburn. He used to coach for the Detroit Lions. He was Ndamukong Suh's D-line coach. And I'm down with him in Miami. And we're talking ball. And I adore the – I didn't know who he was. But then, you find out and you go, oh, this guy – like, this is the guy I want to be around all the time. I want to learn as much as I can from this guy. So we're talking one day, and I just go randomly. I just go, it's the weirdest thing. Like, the Titans and the Jets, they didn't have any name guys. But I'll be damned if, like, we – hated playing them more than anybody. They used to give us fits. And he started laughing. He goes, guess who the D-line coach was? And he MF'd me, he goes, it was me. And it's like, okay. I get it. That's why you have that guy that's like putting the finger in the wound all day, all night with that team. And they came out and they just were tougher. They were just different, and that I know that sounds like it can't possibly be true with all the alpha males in the National Football League, but that is 100% accurate.
Yeah. No, coaching and that stuff matters a ton in this league. It goes unnoticed. I think that the two things that go unnoticed are like A, just the franchises that are so incompetent that it doesn't sometimes even matter what type of talented players they get in the building.
They ruin them.
Yeah. They just ruin them. They ruin the situation, the coaches, the players. And yeah, I think that's number one. And I think the other thing I always have to remind myself of like, I always think about a team in like this altruistic, positive way of like, they're going to do the best thing for the franchise. I'm like, oh yeah, there's owners that kind of meddle in the middle of that and get in the way. And GMs have to look out for themselves and try to make sure that they're protecting their jobs. And I always when you follow Green Bay for forever, and not that they are always perfect by any means, but they have the ability to think a little bit more long-term, have a little bit more job security in those situations. And you sometimes forget that, oh yeah, a lot of the NFL is not operating at that same level where if they don't go out and win this season or figure out a way to impress right now, that there's the whole staff is going to get nuked and it doesn't matter if they build it for the future because the future is not going to include them. So what the heck do they care at that point? And then the other thing is just, again, the ability for really good coaches to press all the right buttons and to have you playing in the right way, in the right moments. And the Detroit defensive line and just defense front seven in this game was such an unbelievable example of that is, Mike, I did not have on my bingo card in this game, Packers offensive line, kind of getting it handed to them early in this game by a Detroit basically practice squad team outside of Za'Darius Smith. And yet here we were early in the game. Detroit set the tone. They set the intensity and Green Bay looked like they were shell-shocked with what was going on. And they settled into the game later. They obviously got the points to get above 30, but Detroit set the tone early and often against a good Packers offensive line. And it was a bunch of no-names on that Detroit defensive front. Hey friends, we are smack dab in the middle of holiday season, and there's only one thing better than the spirit of giving, and that's the spirit of winning. And right now you can make your holidays bigger and brighter with Prize Picks, the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. This holiday season, Prize Picks is giving away two free picks in December, and they're giving away $30+ million in rewards during Picksmas. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, do you think James Cook is going to have more than 60 yards next week? Joe Burrow, more than 1.5 touchdowns? Whatever you think, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season, and you can turn your sports opinions into real money in fewer than 60 seconds. This week, I'm going with a huge bounce back week for Jaden Reed after catching 0 passes last week. Don't see that happening again. I'm also going with Brandon McManus to make multiple field goals on the road in Seattle. I'm also going to be keeping an eye on Josh Allen versus the Lions as well. Whoever you want to pick, make sure you download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 lineup. What are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for?
Who's okay? So, like, again, this is always hard because I'm it's not to badmouth the Packers offensive line, but if you looked at the line from 10 years ago and you said, who's the tough guy? I go, oh, TJ, that's easy.
Yep.
Right. Who do you, I don't have an answer for you right now. I think probably Elton, you know, but there's, I don't see a guy running downfield, you know, trying to knock the block off. So like they don't have that same, that look, that feel to them. So when you say to me, hey, if we go into a hostile environment with a bunch of dogs, are they going to have a problem? Yeah, they might have a problem. Yeah. They might have a problem.
And again, this is not to your point, disparage anyone along the Packers offensive line. It feels to me, and I would love your thoughts on this. It feels to me that the Packers, overall with their offensive line, which I think in general, they've done a really nice job of finding and developing, especially late round draft picks along the offensive line. But it feels like their priority is pass protection and agility and speed and like the ability to get to spots on the field more than it is, I need to go and blow this guy off the ball. Like they don't have maulers on this offensive line. They haven't had those, but they are pretty darn good in pass pro more often than not. And maybe you disagree, like, which is totally fine. Obviously it feels to me like they prioritize, I don't want to, like the word finesse maybe gets thrown out a little bit too easily.
Athleticism
in that more than maybe the guys that are going to, again, like your Penny Sewell is a one of one, but like guys that are going to be able to blow guys off the ball, maybe as much.
Yeah, well, there's two things there. I would argue about Penny Sewell not having the same year as he did last year.
Fair enough.
He had a rough game against us. But here's what I would say about that. It's not like a physical thing. It's like the everybody wants to be, because you guys can measure physical stuff, right? You can measure the tangible, so it's easy for us to go, oh well, you know this, and you're not wrong.
Yep.
You're necessary, but I would argue that I don't think that really matters. Like, I don't think that's not the difference. The difference is, do you have a bunch of guys? The best compliment I was ever paid in my life in football was somebody wrote, like, this kid's a street fighter, man. He just wants to get into it.
Yep.
And I was like, that's pretty much my life. You know, that's like, that's what I want. I want you to fight me. Like, I want you to want to fight me by the end of the game. And because it just takes you off your game. That's that my game is taking you off your game. I want you to think about getting knocked over. I want you to be looking over your shoulder every time you run downfield. Like, that was it. I want you, if you come inside on Chad, know that you're going to get a helmet full of helmet.
Yeah.
And that mentality, you know, Marco wanted you to be crying by the end of the game. Like he wanted to destroy you, you know. Flanagan wanted you to give up, like those guys. And I think that there's a handful of guys like that in the league right now. I mean, you look at Trent Williams, look at Panay, you know, there's guys in the league that are just like, I want you to quit.
Yep.
You know, we want you to quit. And then it's a different generation now. And I just think they're hard to find. And I think some teams are looking for them and some teams are like, no, the athleticism is what matters. And again, you can win a ton of, like Sean McVay has shown, you can win a ton of football games a bunch of different ways with a bunch of different players, right? Yep. Like we know this. It's not like a romanticized thing, but like when a team like Detroit with their coach and their coaching staff and the guys that they've picked in the first round, second round, the priorities that they've made, running back, linebacker, safety, tight end, like we don't care where we're supposed to draft them. We're going to draft the best player on the board to play right now. Like, I'm a football fan. Like, I love them. Like, I love that. And so, you know, this is always the hard part. Like, yeah, you can, you know, I'm a Green Bay Packer, but I love what the Detroit Lions have done and who they are.
As a player, I can only imagine like, that's the team that you want to play for. Like, that's like the going for it on the fourth down, the ultra aggressive, the physicality, the intensity, the way that the coach rallies the team. And then like really smart guys like Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson too, that are scheming everything up. Like, I can only imagine that's where you would want to go.
Imagine going into, so in any given day, imagine going in as a player who was just trying to learn and get better. You walk into team meeting and Dan Campbell, journeyman tight end, like culture warrior, opens his mouth, starts talking. You go into defensive meeting, first round draft pick, Aaron Glenn, New York Jets, right? Starts talking. You go to the defensive line. You take a break and you go over to the offensive line room. Hank Fraley, all pro center, Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You just go, holy hell. Like the amount of information that you can learn about the intimate details of the sport as a player. Forget like all the other stuff. Forget how they talk to the media or, if they're rough around the edges. Just as a player, what you can learn there and the intensity of practice. Come on.
Yep.
Phenomenal.
People are going to know what I'm about to say in regards to this as I start saying it that have listened to the show for a while. But are you familiar when the draft time comes around with the RAS, the relative athletic scores, and that the Packers like their super athletes and things like that?
I actually know the guy who started the relative athletic. Yeah, I know. Okay.
Kentley Platy. All right, perfect. I've joked for a while now that I love the RAS, the relative athletic score. It's a cool metric, whatever. I need a little bit more relative asshole score for the Green Bay Packers. Just a few more guys that are willing to, like you said, be the intimidators on the team. I go back to the Milwaukee Bucks. I've talked about this before. They had an awesome team. Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Brooke Lopez, Drew Holiday. They needed PJ Tucker in order to win that championship. Like without that dude, without that intimidator, they don't win that championship. And they just needed that guy. And it just feels like sometimes Green Bay just needs a few more of those type of guys and maybe a few less of the relative athletic guys.
Yeah. The thing is, it's what's so much fun about football is that because there's 11 players on both sides of the field, we always I'm almost programmed to think that that guy on offense is going to be me or Amon.
Yeah.
Like me or running back or, a lineman. But reality is it could be your tight end. It could be your safety. It could be your linebacker, your defensive tackle. There's so many different personalities in the way they fit in and the leadership roles they have in the locker room and the guys that, I'll never forget. Like, I won't name the kid's name, but Amon essentially ended this kid's career on the sidelines of a practice during training camp because the guy just tested him one too many times. And he was like, it's time for you to not be here anymore.
Right.
It was like he was never the same after that because Amon Green was one of those guys where, like, if you want it, I got all you need. So what does 50 Cent say? Like, I don't want any problems, but you want a problem? No problem.
No problem.
No problem. So there's only a handful of guys like that around these days. And if you're lucky enough to have one or two of them, you're ahead of the game.
Well, flipping the switch and going in a more, kind of positive direction on that. One of the guys that does have that energy, that intensity, that physicality to an extent is Tucker Kraft. He's been a really fun player to watch on this offense. I love the kip up this week. He seems to infuse that within the offense. Like I said, you kind of need a couple guys like that. He seems to bring that intensity and energy to the offensive side of the ball. What is your impression of him in his second season and what he's been able to be for this Packers offense?
I would have said he's the guy we're talking about.
Exactly.
I think he's the guy we're talking about. And he's kind of showed it from day one, man. And he's an exciting player because he's got that, like, what is he, North Dakota State, which means he looks a lot different now than he did then. He's got that hunger to him because he was a small school guy and he really had to develop physically. So he had that, like, he had that mental mindset early on because he had to make it. I love the way he plays. I love the way when he talks to the media or when you hear him on the way he thinks about football and the way he regards himself and his craft and his teammates and the process. It makes me more of a fan of him than I already am. And I love everything that he's done so far. I love the athleticism. I love how much he's put into his blocking. I love how much pride he takes in it. I love that he doesn't run out of bounds. I love the work that he does exterior. I love the teammate that he is. Like he's just one of those guys that again we're talking about. I think the personality is the rare part. I don't think the physicality. Outside of you were talking five people in the league. I don't think the physicality, the bandwidth in town is like this in the National Football League. It's the difference is the personalities. And for me, Tucker Kraft, and I don't know him at all, but everything I see, you know, it speaks volumes the way he carries himself on the football field, and he is so much fun to watch.
He seems to be wired to be the exact, you know, exact mentality that you need in the NFL at the tight end position. He's got everything that you want. Again, I think he continued to improve, separating as a route runner and even some of his blocking stuff. But I mean, obviously, I know that you didn't get to, you know, go out to training camp and like rookie mini camps and OTAs as when he was a rookie last year. Man, this, the talk about the like rookie deer in headlights sort of look of, you know, just not knowing exactly what to do. Again, coming from a smaller school, I mean, the jump that he made from a rookie mini camps and OTAs up until even what he was doing at, I think, the end of last year, and then another jump going into this year, it has been so fun to watch. One of the very first things that struck me about Tucker Kraft, there was a play very early on. I think it was in OTAs. I think it was even, or mini camp, one of the two, where I think they were working on a double team block, something to that effect. And he's going to do it. And he could tell right after he did it, he could tell he did it wrong. And the coach was starting to tell him what he did wrong. He's like, no, I know exactly what I did wrong. He knew exactly, and he wanted to get back and run it again right away. Like, you could tell for all the intensity, the physicality, all the unbelievable physical gifts that he had, like, he also had a thirst for learning the game and doing it the right way. Or like, sometimes you just see guys that just go back and are like, whatever. Like, he was, you know, very tuned in from day one of wanting to be the best player that he can be. And it's really shown in his growth over the last couple seasons.
Yeah, he's got that Brian Cushing to him a little bit, right? Like, you lose one time, you just sit there and start stewing.
Yep.
Start talking to yourself, weight room. Just start, you know, weight room, and then he gets back in line and like dumps the guy over the bag. Yeah, he's that kind of guy, man. He's fun to watch. I bet you he's a beast in the weight room. Like, he's exactly what you envision when you're like, I just want a badass tight end that can do everything. And there's like, is there a George Kittle part two? And you're like, oh, I think we found him. And yep. That's for me, that's a hell of a compliment. And I think we're, you know, he's well on his way.
Yeah. I don't know if he ends up as like the, you know, ounce for ounce version of George Kittle, but even if he's like a B+, A- George Kittle, whatever it is, like, that's the player that to me, he reminds me of as well. And I wouldn't put it past him to get to that level. He's that talented of a player, and he continues to get better game in and game out. As you kind of put your coach's hat on for these final 4 weeks of the season, as we mentioned, Seattle this game, and then you go on the road to New Orleans on Monday Night Football. You've got the Vikings on the road. We don't know exactly when that game's going to be played yet. It could be flexed. And then finally after that, Chicago at home. Not necessarily from a matchup standpoint, but as Green Bay tries to maybe fix some of the issues that they have had and when they haven't been able to beat some of these better teams, what would you really be focusing on over this last month of the season to get the team ready for the postseason?
I think that one of the keys to the Packers winning football games in the postseason is Josh Jacobs averaging over 5 yards a carry.
Okay.
And based on the, you know, like last week's a good example of, you go to Detroit and, you know, that was kind of one of the keys of the game going in. And I think he averaged like 3.7, and it's not because of Josh Jacobs. It's because the Detroit Lions, what we talked about. And I think like this week, as an example, is you're playing against a defense who swapped out their two linebackers for some reason. And then Leonard Williams decided to put on his big boy pads, and he's been just demolishing people for the last 3-4 weeks. And I mean, he's playing like a man against boys. So you're going up against a group with, you know, Jaron Reed's inside. They picked up the kid from Texas first round to be a day one starter, Malcolm Brown Jr. And these guys are playing at a high level. Got Nwosu outside. They've got Mafe on the other side. They can both rush the passer. And so you're looking at, for me, and they're one of the deeper defensive lines in the league. Like their second unit's really good. So I'm super interested in seeing how we attack their running game, and can we keep up with them physically? Like, in other words, when all the smoke and mirrors are gone, and Matt LaFleur is, if not the best smoke and mirrors guy right now in the league, he's one of them.
Yep.
But when you got to get that hard yard, can you get it? I think that's going to be really important in the playoffs. And then the other thing is, there has been some exposure of middle of across the field pass, middle of the field passing for Green Bay. I think we do a really good job in the other zones, but middle of the field's been open. Obviously, a lot of that has to do with some of the linebacker play. Are we going to – look, you go to the last 4, 5, 6 years in the National Football League, you go to the playoffs, like, how many deep crossers you see? I mean, San Francisco used to live and die on them. So yep. It's like, you know, are we going to be able to show up, you know, that maybe that one thing on offense, that one thing on defense? I think this week in particular will really be a good indicator for that moving forward to see if they can make some progress, because I think the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, the Seahawks aren't really in-cut guys, but, you know, they are second level slant guys. They're guys that are going to try to find those second windows with DK Metcalf in particular. So there are things to work on. And then again, Andy, I guess if I'm going to ramble a little bit more, it's like, are we going to find a pass rush? Like a real pass rush, not a, I got my eyes in the A gap, so I give up a sack pass rush, but are we going to find one-on-one pass rushes? And I love what they've done to scheme around it. Don't get me wrong. But as a player, I'm like, guys, you know, we have to be able to win one-on-one matchups. That is your value to the team ultimately is your ability to win your 1v1 matchup. Like we have to win more than we are right now if we want to be successful deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm struggling. It's December 12th. They've played 13 games and there hasn't really been any sign that is anything that's coming up around the corner. I did think Kenny had one of his better games of the season this past week, but a lot of that was in the run game. I think it was in PFF charted him with one pressure for the week. I think Rashawn Gary is playing solid football, but not to the level that he's becoming an impact pass rusher or getting those 2-3 sack, you know, games or anything like that. His sack this week was a little bit kind of, you know, obviously Quay Walker came, he cut it inside. So yeah, I just don't see any of that. I hope you have better news than I do. I just don't see anyone that's right now playing at that level that I'm like, yep, they look like they can do it. Devontae Wyatt doesn't look like he can do it right now. Carl Brooks hasn't been that guy. You know, Brenton Cox and Aaron Mosby have been solid rotational guys, but they don't look like they're all of a sudden just going to step up and be big time passers. Like, I don't know where it's going to come from at this point.
Yeah. You like Cox because he doesn't care. Like Cox knows that he gets paid on sacks. Like you can just tell, like, he doesn't care about run fakes. He's like, I'm going, I don't care what you do. Yep. You know, my advice to the opposing team would be like, don't fake to his side. He will not buy it. He's going for the quarterback. I like that kid a lot, but you're absolutely right. You know, not to harp on it, because this is one of the hard thing about the NFL is like, these guys are pros, you know, they work their craft and these guys play extremely hard. Like they're getting everything they're getting is because they play hard.
Effort.
Yep. Van Ness gets a sack because he plays hard off Carl Brooks' double swipe to the outside. You know, Halfley does a good job. The first two games, they scheme Quay to hit the guard and then Kenny gets a sack. Then they pop it out to the tackle. Then they pop it out to the other side, and they don't know what's going on. So we get a pressure on, you know, I mean, so they're doing such a good job of scheming all of this. And Igbari gets the sack on, they bring the two guys in the A gap. Armstead's staring at him for a half second too long. You know, so like these things are happening, but it's like, it's been, what's interesting as a player is that I haven't seen a new move.
No.
I haven't seen a new move, and that's
where more development.
How have I not seen a new move in 13 weeks? I can tell you exactly what anybody on their team is going to do at any given point on the field just by where they're at. And that's, you know, I have a book on these guys and the book is like not very long.
No,
you know what I mean? It's if he's here, he's doing this. If he's there, he's doing that. And that's it.
Yeah. It's mind-boggling as to why that is. And I will give them credit. I think, and again, I'd love your thoughts on this too. Like, it feels like they've been better against the run. I don't see Rashawn running himself out of plays quite as much. And like, they are at 4.1 yards per carry, which is tied for sixth in the league. So I don't know if like their emphasis this year and Jeff Halfley's first year was like, hey, we're going to be a lot better against the run. And they focused all their time, effort, and energy on that. And they said, you know what? When we need pressures, we'll be able to scheme up pressure. Like, I don't know. Obviously, I know there's only so much time in a day. And maybe that is. Maybe they're just then so intently focused on run defense and correcting that after years of not being where they needed it to be, that's taken all their time, effort, and energy. But man, it does feel like a prerequisite to being a good playoff team is at least a decent pass rush with a 4-man rush. And I just don't see any semblance of that coming right around the corner.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be fair to say that after the prior couple of years, that Halfley came in and said, okay, we're going to be better against the run.
Yeah.
Our safeties are not going to miss alley tackles anymore. And right. For the most part, that's exactly what they've done. They've done a really good job. Let's not minimize what a big deal that is, because it is a big deal. And of course, it's easy to sit down here and go like, oh, shit, man, but they can't. I'm sorry, but you know, they can't pass rush. And it's like, well, they've done, they're such a fun defense to watch, and they've done so much better. Again, it's just, you get paid by, you know, everybody knows you get paid, but there's one number that they look at the defensive end. They don't look at, you know, pass rush, run away. Hey, how many sacks you got? Let me just do a quick, who's going to the Pro Bowl this year? I don't know. Let me just see who's got the most sacks. Like, it's real easy. You know, and so it, just for that reason alone, and as a player, I understand the process of it, but you have to try something different, and that they haven't done it. It has been, or should we even say that the coaches seem to have worked more on their pass rush from a scheme standpoint than the players have worked on it from their craft? And that part, while I'm sure that's not literally true, it does feel that way, and it's weird.
I totally agree. And hopefully there's, you know, an answer around the corner, and hopefully they can find it. Maybe they're just holding back until the playoffs start and they're going to unleash hell amongst the rest of the NFL. But that would be a pleasant surprise at this point in time. All right, before we get you out of here, Packers, Seahawks, again, we've talked about some of it as we've kind of meandered through today's episode, but keys to this game and what you're going to be watching for.
Well, the defensive line, I think, is going to be interesting. Certainly, the Packers play and they play a bunch of different stuff. They like to mix up coverages. They run a ton of pressures. They show a lot of simulated pressure. So we're going to have to deal with all that, and you're going to have to deal with it in Quest Field, which I can just tell you firsthand is a very difficult place to play, particularly on a Sunday night when the Seahawks seem to have a lot more to play for, and they're really excited in that town about Mike McDonald and the job he's done. Like, they didn't think they would be in this position right now. And they're really excited about the opportunity that lies ahead, certainly the chance to become an NFC North champions and get that first round at home. So I think you're really going to have to with Josh Jacobs in particular, but I think that offensive line, like, we're really going to have to control the line of scrimmage early on. We need to go out and set the tone on that side in the trenches early on, not like, you know, as opposed to last week, set the tone this week. Be the people who do the first punch in the mouth. And then defensively, Geno Smith is a good quarterback.
Yeah, he is.
And they have three number one wide receivers. I mean, you know, maybe Tyler Lockett's not a number one anymore, but you look at DK, Smith-Njigba over from Ohio State. That kid is unbelievable.
Really good.
And so you're looking at guys where, who do you want to leave open? You know, usually when you look at Kenneth Walker III, I don't know if he's up or not. Zach Charbonnet is really good too.
Yep.
But they've got two good running backs if Kenneth Walker's up. And it's like, you know, defensively you're going, okay, who am I taking away? And usually that's a pretty easy task when in a wide receiver room, I got to take away this guy. I think 11's number one on their team right now. He's the number one wide receiver.
I'd agree.
That means DK's two. And that's a real problem because especially if Alexander's hurt, if Evans out, you know, if 33's out, with the concussion, like, we got some problems.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm just kind of sitting here doing idiot math going like, who covers DK Metcalf on the Green Bay Packers? Like, I'm just talking about physically, and I'm not trying to insult anybody, but he's frightening to look at. You know, he's not David Boston, but it's like pretty damn close, you know?
Yes,
and
he
so
is.
As a number two guy, you're going like, holy hell. The thing that you would hope for is that and the Seahawks right tackle just got healthy. So they've had a lot of problems up front.
They have.
And they had a really good game last week. But, like, the Packers, the Arizona Cardinals, like, we talk about coaching all the time, Andy. I'll just, you know, divert this again one more time. If you look at the game plan for the Arizona Cardinals, like, you want to talk about a head scratcher? Holy hell. Like, I can guarantee that the Packers aren't coming in with that game plan.
No.
But having all, you know, settle that, the right tackle's back. They've made some changes inside. Some guys have been hurt. Obviously, I think they had the retirement at the center position.
Connor Williams, yep.
And so that looks to be coming around. And that, but if you were ever going to get hot, right, and get some defensive line pressure, particularly up the middle, it might be a good week to take a look at that. And I'm pretty sure their left guard is injured. If he's not out for the game, he might be injured, Lakin Tomlinson. So you got some opportunities there for sure. both running backs are good if they're healthy. Yeah, I think this is going to be, honestly, this is a 46-point over-under. Like, I think this is an over, man. Like, I think there's going to be some points in this game, to be honest with you. I think one of these teams hits 30.
Would not surprise me. I think both these teams will have the ability to find mismatches on the opposing, you know, defense. And I think whoever executes better, and specifically in the red zone, is going to be have a huge leg up in this game. Do you have a feel for this one from a prediction standpoint?
I mean, the Packers are a better team. I mean, man-to-man, the Packers are a better team. Matt LaFleur is just really, really good at calling offensive football plays. You love what Halfley's been doing. But, you know, Mike McDonald brings that Baltimore Ravens mystique, you know, with and the defensive play calling. They seem to be hitting their stride on defense. Like, this is – you don't know what the crowd noise is and that defensive line is going to do to our offensive line. And that's like, to me, that's like the key to the game is how's that going to look? Yep. If Matt LaFleur finds a way to minimize the impact that those two things have on our offensive line and our ability to like keep the quarterback clean and open some holes, then I think the Packers win this one by 10. But if not, like I think this is a really, really close game, and you know, the Seahawks play pretty well at home.
It feels like it's time, and you mentioned it earlier with getting Josh Jacobs going and like the 5 yards per carry. It feels like they have to get back to that, because to your point, it's not been a Josh Jacobs issue. It's been a blocking issue. It's been, you know, just they haven't been able to get him going as much. If they can get him going earlier in this game, and Josh Jacobs' best game of his career, if I remember correctly, is not against this Seahawks team, obviously, but has been against the Seattle Seahawks. So maybe there's a little good juju there. But if they can get him going early and often in this game, I feel really, really good about Green Bay's chances to come away with a win. If it's another sort of struggle and, you know, maybe Seattle tries to copy and paste a little bit of what Detroit tried to do and said, no, you're not going to run with Josh Jacobs, and he's more around that 3 yards per carry, I think Seattle's going to have a real opportunity in this one.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, you'd almost boil this down to like, if Packers win the first quarter, you feel really good about the game. And if the Seattle Seahawks, you look at the end of the first quarter and it's like 10-3 or something, Seattle, you're like, you know, it's still a really close game, but it's like Seattle's a slow starter too. So, and you're at home and all that, you want to see them find that thing that sparks them. And they've had so many games this year where it's like you get a turnover, like Jaden Reed has a big play, or, you know, there's so many things that can happen because they're so talented. Their ceiling's so high. But it's really important going into the playoffs that they are able to establish an identity up front that is consistent with, like, it's 3rd-and-2, we need to run the football, period. You know, no cutesy stuff. Like, we got to run the football. We got to move people out of the way. We got to be people who move humans and humans who move humans. And to your point, like, I think Jenkins is by far the best player and the leader on that line, or maybe, you know, Zach Tom, but leader on that line.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is an opportunity for him to, you know, get those guys together and say, hey, listen, like, everybody on my shoulders, let's go. You know, it's time to roll out.
I love it.
Really, because he's going to be playing against their best player, you know.
Byron Murphy? Or no, Leonard Williams.
Leonard Williams. Yeah.
Both of them very good players, but yeah, Leonard Williams leg up at this point in their careers. Forgot about him for a second. Really quick before I let you go, I know you're always about the process. Is there a process thing about starting fasting games? Is it happenstance? Is there like how is that something where you can get off on the right foot? Are you team receive the ball, kick the ball? Should it not matter? Like what goes into that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I mean, obviously there's obviously a player centric, like, how am I going to do individually?
Yep.
But then from a team standpoint, if you're trying to establish dominance, you know, I've been like, if you want to establish dominance, take the football and go score, you know, like all this other, you know, take, you know, get double up at the halftime. It's like, it's a great strategy and it makes a ton of sense and it can be devastating, but I'm like, man, if you want to establish dominance, go get the football and score. Like that's what does it for me, at least. So I think there's a little bit of that mentality. And I think Matt LaFleur tries to do that. You know, I think he has that a little bit of that to him. Like, no, we'll just go ahead and take it and score right now if it's okay with you guys, you know? And then I don't know how they run their first 15, but I do know that when the night before, like I could tell you almost with, you know, a huge level of certainty that when we went into a game and we looked at like the O-line, we get together and we see our first 15 plays, and whether it's Sherm or Holmgren, whoever's going through them, he goes through them on the board and we're all looking at him. We're like, okay, like, we're going to, like, okay, Amon's getting the ball there. It's a, you know, screen. We got shallow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to score it. These 15 are good. Like, and we know how their defense play. You know what I mean? You start going and you just walk in. You're like, man, I feel really good about what's going on. And then the game rolls out. So you're able to run the plays that you thought you were going to run. Cause sometimes you get in that situation and it's like, you know, two jet all go, whatever. You're like, what happened? you know what I mean? But if in those situations where you set expectations, you are bullish on the expectations, and then they've, and then by, you know, luck or whatever, they have the first three of them happen to play out like you think, it's like
go time.
Let's go time.
Makes sense. Mike, I learned something every single time we talk. I cannot thank you enough for all the time, effort, and energy that you put into this and taking the time out of your day to talk Packers with us. It's always the absolute best. Where can we find your YouTube channel and anything else you want to plug on the way out?
Yeah, Process to Perform on YouTube. And just hit me up on Twitter, guys. If I'm traveling back to the States on Sunday. So this will be this background will be changed finally. Hopefully I can get my microphone to work better. But aside from that, Andy, it's been a pleasure. And, as always, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. You are the absolute best. As I mentioned, enjoy your time back in the United States. We will talk very, very soon. Find him on social media at MikeWall68. And of course, follow him over on YouTube as well and check out his unbelievable channel where you're going to get the best breakdowns in the business. That's going to do it for Mike and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.